Good morning, folks. Welcome to 2012 Warbirds in Review. And in deference to my son, my name is Sam Bass. This is my birthday, July the 28th, 1933. So this is my birthday present, having the honor of being to interview these gentlemen. This airplane belongs, this Panchito belongs to Larry Kelly. He's from Enterprise, Alabama. He's got quite a resume, but I'm not going to go into it. He has 4,000 hours. He's been with the DAV flight team for 10 years. Now, what I'd like to do is Larry's going to tell us a little bit about the history of the B-25 and then about the particular airplane itself. Here, Larry.
Thank you, Sam. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You don't look that old. This particular airplane is not the original airplane that carried the Panchito nose art. This particular airframe was built in October 1944 in the last contract series North American had, manufactured in Kansas City, Kansas, where all the J models and the H models were manufactured. The B models that the Raiders flew were all manufactured out in California. Then later, the C models were manufactured in California, the D models in Kansas City, along with all the J and H models. The G model you hear about was actually a D model. It was converted, had the cannon added to it. The H models came out of the factory with the cannons in the nose, a 75-millimeter artillery piece mounted in the crawlway going up to the bombardier's nose. But this airframe, built in October 1944, entered service in January 1945 and was used as a crew transition trainer. Now, what that means is pilots had just finished pilot training and gotten their wings. Bombardiers just gotten their wings. Gunners had just gotten theirs. Everybody just finished their trade schools and their technical schools. Would be brought together as a crew, and they would be assigned an airplane at a training base or transition base where they would learn to their fighting skills as a crew. They'd go out and do bombing practice, strafing practice, and learn to practice together, and then be shipped off to the theater of war to become replacement crews in the different theaters around the war. Other crews would get in the airplanes, and that would just repeat over and over and over again at these transition bases. Now, the original Panchito, built in the same lot number as this airplane, or same batch number, I guess you could say, was assigned to the 41st Bomb Group and was flown to Hawaii in early January 1945. And the 41st Bomb Group had already seen service down in the Central Pacific, had done their job there. The Japanese were pretty much defeated in that area where they were assigned. So the 41st was brought back to Hawaii to get outfitted with new crews and newer airplanes. They had G models down in the South Pacific, and they were getting the new J models. Everybody knew by then that it was only a matter of time before the Japanese were defeated, and the 41st was going to be one of the outfits going to Okinawa to be assigned for the softening up of the Japanese. And at the time the airplane was assigned, Don Seiler was a senior combat pilot in the 396 Bomb Squadron. You'll see his name painted under the wing up here, or under the cockpit window. And Don had volunteered for a second tour, and his buddy Ben Tarnauskas, he'd gone through all the training with, had volunteered for a second tour. They went to the base theater. They saw a movie called The Three Caballeros. And they could see themselves, one as the suave green parrot who was the ladies' man. That was Karaoke Joe. Any of you that's seen the movie, it was one of Disney's feel-good animated musicals from World War II. And Don Seiler could see himself as Panchito, that high-energy Mexican rooster with the 2 6 guns. And so he painted Panchito on his airplane. Karaoke Joe was painted the other one. Off they went to Okinawa, began their combat operations in the late spring of 1945. But just for a little perspective, at that time, Don Seiler was 22 years old. And he was a senior combat pilot in the 396 Bomb Squadron. He was the guy the new guys had to fly with before they could fly missions on their own. So that's where the name came from. All the 41st Bomb Group at the end of the war, all were ordered to go to Clarkfield. The airplanes were lined up, blown up, and the debris was bulldozed into ravines, big dugout holes that were done there on Clarkfield. And there the remains of the original Panchito remained, except for the 8-day clock, which sits on the mantle of Bill Miller's house. Bill passed away last year, though he was the last surviving original crew member. The difference is, some of you have been asked many times, between the J model and the B models that the Raiders flew, same basic airframe, same basic engines, A lot more armament was added later on. The package guns were not on. The early ones, that's the guns on the side. The guys had one 30 caliber machine gun in the nose that could stick from one hole to the other. David Thatcher here had a one turret mounted just after the bomb bay, a Bendix turret with two 50 caliber guns in it that occasionally would work, most often wouldn't work, right, David? And did you have trouble with yours on the rate? Did yours work?
Not very well.
Okay. But anyway, and then they had very little armor. They didn't have the waist gun positions in the original B models, and in the later J models, it just kept adding more and more as the airplane evolved more from a medium altitude bombing role, which wasn't designed for, more into low altitude, much like the A-10 is used for today. You can imagine all these fixed guns, and with the 8-gun strafer version where you had 8 50 calibers in the nose, plus the others, you could get 14 50 caliber guns firing forward for strafing. You put 4 or 5 of these things side by side, you could do a lot of damage to a Jap airfield or a train or troop emplacements. Dropping parafrags as you pass over, strafing on the way out, so evolve more into the A-10 type role for today. Sam, would you want to introduce the Raiders?
Yes.
On my left, we have the co-pilot from the number one airplane with General Doolittle. Says, this is Colonel Cole. Now, I have a little information on Colonel Cole here. I'll try to make it too short. Not too short, but well enough to talk about it. But he was went in the military in November the 22nd, 1940. As I said, he was in ship number one on the raid of April the 18th, 1942. After the raid, he served in the China-Burma-India Theater as June the 43, June the 44. The decorations of the Flying Cross, the DFC, with two oak leaf clusters, the Air Medal with one oak leaf cluster, the Bronze Star, Air Force Commendation Medal, the Chinese Medal Class A First Grade. On my right is Master Sergeant David Thatcher. He was ship number 7, which is a unique ship in a couple of ways. Number one is when you see the movie and you'll see one that they take off and it sinks down and it almost hits the water. That was ship number 7. They there's a reason behind it, and Sergeant Thatcher will tell you that they ended up with the flaps up when they should have been down. But it was the ruptured duck. The pilot was Ted Lawson, and he wrote 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. Sergeant Thatcher was in the Army. He started in December the 3rd, 1940, went to Mechanical School, A&E, in December of 41. And after the raid, he served in England and Africa. His decorations are, he was one of two Raiders that received the Silver Star, DFC Air Medal, 4 oak leaf clusters, and Chinese Army Class A First Grade. And we'll get into this Silver Star, how he was earned, awarded, however you want to put it, the Silver Star later on in our interview here. And Larry just talked about the B-25 in particular. And before I get started on the interview, I'd like to say that after we get through with this, please, you people, just stay in your seats until these gentlemen can get back over to the Warbirds in review tent over here for the sales, and they'll be there. And we have some items. They have prints of their own that they are selling, and they will be signing. All that money goes to an education fund. There are 3 books over there that are Jimmy Doolittle's autobiography. There's 2 about the raid. There's also a DVD that you people may have seen or may not have seen that was on the military channel. So those items are over there, and they will be over there to autograph those items. And please allow them to don't come up here. Let them get over there. Plus the fact there'll be guards here to keep from getting up here anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. And also, as you pass, if you like this Warbirds interview and this beautiful facility here, we have a bomb over here for donations. And this is all volunteer. We're all volunteers. And so any donation that you'd like to make, we appreciate it if you put it in our bomb. Jack Roush provided us with that bomb. And also, we'd like to have you members, the people that are not members of the Warbirds of America. We're not all airplane owners. 90% of the people here are not airplane owners. They just support the Warbirds. And we try to welcome you if you come in. We have an excellent magazine, comes out once a month. So now we've got through with all the commercial. I'd like to ask Colonel Cole the first question, sir, is how were you selected, number one, for the group? Number two, in particular, how were you selected to be the co-pilot, and what was your training? I think it's on.
Actually, it wasn't a matter of selection. It was a case of just incidents happening. I was crewed up with a senior pilot, and in the middle of our training, he became ill, and that left us without a pilot. I had been upgraded as a pilot, but was just recently, I didn't feel confident enough to try to go as the first pilot. So the crew talked it over, and I went to the ops officer, and he said, well, the old man's coming in this afternoon, and I'll crew you up with him. And I thought, well, now we get to fly with an old man. Maybe that's not such a good idea. But I had never heard a captain talk about his commander as the old man. But I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, and I know who Jimmy Doodle was because I had a scrapbook with all his flying experiences. He came in that afternoon about 1 o'clock, and by 2 o'clock, we were on our way to Lakeland, Florida, for some business he had to do. And from there, we went to Washington, the Bowling Field, and back to Wright Field, and then back down to Eglin. And he didn't fire us, so we turned out to be his crew.